Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Varsha, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to your Sunday night with Speed City.
Two-wheel gearheads.
Yeah, we got some two-wheel talk tonight. We're going to talk a little MotoGP, but we are going to talk some Formula One as well. This is John Massengill sitting across from my friend Jonathan Green. Mr. Green, how are you, sir?
Very well, very well. Looking forward to the boys being back in town. And in fact, in celebration, we're going down to NASA yet again.
10 years of MotoGP. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and it's also been a really interesting era because we're kind of starting a new era post-Rossi.
Post-Rossi and post-Marquez, possibly.
Well, and if you think about it, we were at the start of the phenomena that is Marc Marquez and now his brother, Alex, who was pole last time. In that time period, Marc Marquez got his first victory at Austin, as did Sam Lowes in Moto2.
Yep.
So, you know, they both return, I hope, because Marquez has been out, injured, so has everybody else by the looks of things. And, so we're hoping that we'll get as many riders as we can, certainly on the MotoGP grid. I think it was down to 17 in Argentina.
Sheesh. Well, we also have an expert. We got Vito from Ducati Austin.
Perfect time. They're celebrating.
Yeah. I mean, living large at Ducati right now, right?
No kidding. On a serious note, you know, I'd like to talk to Vito, who we've known, of course, for a long time, but I'd like to get his temperature on the bike market generally, because, you know, post-COVID, pre-COVID, during COVID, you know, do people put a helmet on and go outside because of COVID, or did sales guy, you know,
that's a we've had Vito and I and Mark,
had this discussion.
It's a really good discussion.
Okay, good.
And I think you will enjoy it because it's some good stuff in that, but we are going to talk some Formula One tonight. We're going to start with Formula One. And somebody asked me, why is Formula One taking the summer break so early? I said, they're not. They're taking a spring break early. And they said, why are they doing that? And I said, well, it's not that they really intentionally set out to do that. It's because the Chinese Grand Prix was supposed to be slotted in here, and it was canceled. So it's kind of weird, but I kind of like it. from our standpoint, we can kind of do a reset, get ready for Miami because we're going to be out in Miami, of course.
Yeah.
Get ready for Miami and do a reset. But that's why. That's why Formula One's taking this little four-week break here. But one thing I wanted to talk about was some news. Our buddy Chris Medlin put a story up on racer.com that you caught it before I did, talking about the sprint race changes that they're going to do for the upcoming Azerbaijan Grand Prix. And it's really interesting. The way this change is coming about, Jonathan, because basically what they're going to do is just turn up the volume for every day, right? Because they're going to have the qualifying on Friday. It'll be, you know, and that qualifying will be for the Sunday Grand Prix. But on Saturday, instead of having a practice, they're going to have the qualifying for the sprint race later that day. So in other words, Friday means something, Saturday means something, and Sunday means something. So they're just making sure that every single day has a lot of relevance.
Yeah, and I think in theory, it could be good. It could be really good because of exactly that reason. I mean, you know, in some of the articles I was reading, it's like you don't show up to a soccer game on a Wednesday for training, do you?
Yeah.
You know, you just show up for the match on Sunday. And I do believe modern motorsport is going that way. In Trans Am, we don't even bring the cameras in until Saturday morning. And that's not that's just a cost-saving exercise. But I don't think people want to see Friday's practice or, you know. So, yeah. You know, it's interesting if you're doing the commentary, of course. And you could, you know, and I think in the future, you could be in a situation if we were money-saving where you could get a drone and a couple of cameras and cover a free practice, for example.
Yeah.
And not employ 22 cameramen. But then again, you know, generally speaking, with a circus like MotoGP or Formula One, those guys are there anyway. So it'll be a balance between that. But in terms of format for Formula One, I think it's a good idea because, like you say, there'll be relevance and things to tune in. And if you have a steady weather pattern, i.e. it's perfect, it's the same weather conditions each and every day, then think about qualifying on Saturday morning compared to Friday afternoon, let's say, or Friday and Saturday, and it's similar temperatures. What could you learn from that? Mm-hmm. I also heard that the qualifying for the sprint race would be like the most you could get in Q3 would be one lap.
Yeah.
So that makes it more intense because any mistakes, therefore, you know, you miss corner.
So what about the argument that I've heard, the one that's kind of popped up the most I've heard is that it kind of removes some of the glamour from the actual Grand Prix, the big Sunday event.
I don't think so. I really don't. There's less points available. It's a shorter race. I do worry about, you know, we've been trying to cut costs for ages. And I mean, you know, sprint race by its definition means you're going hell bent for leather quickly at a shorter distance of time. So are you taking more risks?
Yeah, good question.
And therefore, is there going to be more damage and crashes?
This is going to be really relevant to our conversation with Vito because we're seeing lots of that in MotoGP right now because they went to a sprint race format too.
Correct. And I have more of a problem with MotoGP, not through crashes, but through injuries.
Yeah.
Because they have something like, they've got their biggest season ever, MotoGP, 23 races. But I don't know how it works out and how many sprint races exactly, but I think it's something like 42 races in all. This season. Now, if your body, like Marc Marquez, you know, and you're prone to doing the odd craziness while collecting world championships, the odds are against you being injury free for a season. So they could shoot themselves in the foot, whereas Formula One, very, very, very rarely do you get any form of injury from a crash in Formula One. Thank you, Dutch Wood.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's a different sport, but you know, I'm not so sure about the sprint format, but all of motorsport and, you know, this is what NASCAR learned from, from COVID. They cut it down and said, hey, just show up and qualify or not even qualify, race, just race. And I like that because you're talking to your spotter and your engineer and that first pit stop is the first time you adjust the car in NASCAR. So there'll be a touch of that in Formula One because... And when the conditions change, it's like, okay, you're at Monza, Friday race, sprint race, went well, you know, but it's raining on Saturday.
Yeah. Did you see what Frederic Vasseur, Ferrari boss, said about the sprint races. He said, for once, I think all the teams were aligned. It's not very often that's the case. So we had to jump on it. He said, the format is more dynamic and you can discuss about doing it so late, as in before the race, before at the end of the day, I think we're all aligned to have a push for it. In other words, every team, I think it was a unanimous vote to move.
It was.
Which was stunning, right? That all 10 teams vote on anything and agree on anything.
But am I right in saying, because I asked about this, because I read that Medellin story, it's just the sprint races of which there are six, including COTA, right?
That's right.
So,
that's right.
Okay.
And I think it's not officially ratified yet, I think, pending ratification.
Yeah, and you know what I like about that? On a non-sprint race weekend, we'll get the vibe, and the fans will get the vibe for whether they prefer one format or the other.
Yeah, I think this is a great way to do this. Let's sprinkle it in, see how it goes. And I mean, this is the second year we've been doing this. So, but this new change, hopefully, they'll ratify it. And we'll do it all six races this year. We'll see how.
You know the Achilles heel in all this for Formula One, though.
What's that?
The one guy they can't convince is the current world champion and the most exciting racer in Formula One, who has been quite outspoken about his hate of the DNA of Formula One being changed by all this. And frankly,
yes. Did you hear Verstappen? What he said about, he's looking at the producer. Did you hear what Verstappen said about the restart? About all starts in Formula One right now. He said, everyone is so aggressive on lap one because they all know that's the only chance they have.
Yeah.
We all know that. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was pretty stunning that Max, you know how most Formula One drivers are not going to say that stuff.
But he does.
Max just said, yeah,
And I also think they have arrived with just a stinger of a car that I don't think even they believe how good it is.
We don't know how good that car is yet.
No.
That's my opinion. I think they're holding their
powder. God forbid they both qualify first and second for a change.
Yeah, exactly. That would be, Well, we got plenty more to come about Formula One, and we will see how all that works out. But.
And, you know, it'd be good tonight to also talk about the comparisons between the two sports, because they are the top two motorsports in the world, and they have very different, fortunes at the moment. And obviously, Formula One is on a huge high at the moment. And during Rossi's 10 years, let's say, or at the height of Rossi's powers, and Stoner and so on, MotoGP have been on a huge crest for the last 10 years, but they've had a dip now. And part of that is Rossi's gone, and that'll happen when Hamilton goes, but Verstappen has come. And the same with MotoGP. And I'm looking forward, actually, to learning more about some of the characters, in MotoGP. I mean, some of them I know well, some of them are just new. But Rossi's still involved. He got his first win last weekend.
Yeah, as a team owner.
Yep.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk MotoGP with Vito from Ducati Austin. You're listening to Sunday Night with Speed City, back after this.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built, Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell, FIA, and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, WindingRoadRacing.com.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary, but the good news is if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you may qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to your Sunday night with Speed City. We are going to shift gears and talk some two-wheel, some MotoGP. We got MotoGP coming to Austin for the 10th time.
Next weekend,
that's right. And we have a man who's probably pretty excited about the recent success of the Ducati brand. We have Vito from Ducati Austin. Vito, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, it's we've been hanging out with you for 10 years talking Ducati, and it's really exciting for me to talk to you because back in the day, 10 years ago, when Ducati wasn't at the top of the charts in MotoGP, we talked about, trying to get some attention and the dominance of Honda and then followed by the dominance of Marc Marquez. And now you guys are getting the same dominance criticism now. I thought that was kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of funny because, you know, no one really complained a whole lot when Honda was doing it and Yamaha then had their years. And
yeah,
you know, Ducati really just filled a void because the other brands really weren't taking care of their satellite teams. And Ducati came in and filled it. Perfect example is Yamaha with RNF. You know, they were only giving them 1 year contracts and Aprilia came in and, you know, gave them a multi-year. And you can't blame a team for wanting stability. And, you know, the other ones weren't really taking care of their customers really at the end of the day. And Ducati sort of came in and took care of it.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure everybody knows everything about Vito because you guys, not only you have Ducati Austin, but you guys have the San Antonio shops. Y'all have got,
yeah,
what, Ducati, Triumph, yeah, Aprilia, and Moto Guzzi. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. We just moved into our new facility at the end of January, actually, last day. And we're in there now. It's about 95%, but we're in there. We're just sold our first Aprilia last week. It's pretty exciting.
Cool
brand. I used to actually race them myself.
Nice.
But I'm a Ducati guy through and through, to be honest. So long time.
What I love about that combination, though, is you've got Moto Guzzi, you've got Aprilia and Ducati. And so, you know, if you are a sort of, you know, true blue Italian love of the great motorcycle, then you can't go wrong. And then you've got Triumph for idiots like me from Britain.
Yeah. Yeah, and Aprilia.
You weren't supposed to agree with that.
Well, not about the Britain part. Okay. British, you know. I mean, you guys are young. You got your motor too, so we'll give you that.
There you go.
Yeah, and there's a couple good riders out there.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, you were going to say something about the Ducati discussion.
Well, yeah, no, I was going to see. I mean, you know, tough question, Vito, but you know, we've always known. I mean, as you well know, we came sort of together when I was in World Superbikes, and of course, it is a famed, you know, dominance that they had for many, many, many years in Ducati at World Superbike level, especially when I started in World Superbikes at the height of Carl Fogarty's career. And that continued with the likes of Corsa and many others. But what do you think? We always used to say Ducati are the most innovative. They brought the fins in first. They brought all the wings in first. Then it was, wow, the Ducati in a straight line. Look at it from above here at Qatar. It's incredible. So it, you know, it always had these elements. But what is it last year, do you think, that made it the invincible?
You know, they just kept on plugging away. And I think, honestly, sort of a changing of the guard, actually, when it came even to the riders. Mm-hmm. You know, they've always been sort of the team wanted, sort of like in Formula One, you want an experienced rider, and then you want, you know, sort of your new guy. And Ducati just decided they needed to, you know, make a big break and big change. And they've heard it over the years about, you know, the handling of the bike wasn't there. You know, it didn't turn quick enough. It wasn't good enough in that direction. And they've honestly just plugged away and plugged away and plugged away until they made a bike that really is just a great all-around bike. And like you said, Jonathan, you know, they've been very innovative. And I think it's really all three of the European brands, KTM, Aprilia, and Ducati, are all, you know, sort of, they're way more innovative, quicker to react than the two, you know, Japanese brands that have been very dominant. They're a little bit more like old school, big, huge corporate, you know, dynamic. And Ducati has just been constantly testing, constantly bringing new parts to the table. And, you know, they had that rap for a long time that they wouldn't listen to the riders. And I think that's changed.
Yeah. And also seemingly what's changed in sort of my era of MotoGP is that instead of you having the factory Ducati team with the Desmond, you know, Sedici GP23 and then Pramac or whoever else, Grassini, you know, and Pramac having a sort of last year's version. This year, all of them are GP23. And that's going to help, you know, all boats, you know, all ships, what's the expression?
Rising tide lift all boats.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But is that part of it too? Is that everybody's got the same spec?
So actually, Pramac and the course team are both all running 23s. Where Bezzecchi and Marini they're on 22s.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the 22 is a great bike, yeah, and it's well sorted out. But they really do have just 22s and 23s. Yeah. They're not going like 3 years back or anything like they used to do. You know, it used to be there'd be like, you know, 2 years back some of the teams running. So they're much more consistent. And you know what the other teams are complaining about the dominance is that Ducati's able to take so much data. And the 23, you know, is really very evolutionary from the 22. So you can still get good information off a 22 to a 23.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And well sorted out. I mean, last year, crazy dominance, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And it's sort of to like Enya Bastianini last year, you know, who won four races, who was on a 21 and, you know, Pecco was on the 22. And he struggled at the beginning because they made a lot of changes. So, you know, that I think is helping Bezzecchi and Marini, you know, in these first few races.
I also think that from a management point of view, having Paolo Ciabatti and also Davide Tardozzi, who effectively between them were responsible for the last domination of Ducati and World Superbikes. You know, for those who don't know that, because that, again, that's my superbike background showing there. But, you know, I think having that consistency at the top and trusting that they know what they're doing, one an ex-rider, another ex-managing director of both Ducati and World Superbike, you know, there's some pretty good people at the hand of the wheel of the ship, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you guys were talking earlier about, you know, the comparison of Formula One to MotoGP. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Formula One fan. I'm a Ferrari fan. But they've had no stability at the top.
That's
and I
it.
Think it shows for them
yep.
versus what you're saying, Jonathan, about Ducati, and they have stability and it just, you know, helps with the success. And same you see in Red Bull versus, you know, some of the other, you know, Ferrari example.
Well, let me ask you this then. Do you feel as I do that Vasser could be the guy to turn the ship at Ferrari then?
I hope so.
Yeah, they need it. They've got a great product. They've got two of the greatest drivers. I've said this, you know, all along.
And
I still
fast
think
car.
They got a really fast car, and they cheated with it a couple of years ago. But but that's Formula One. Hey. But it is. But you know, but that's Formula One. You push the rules, and if you don't get caught, that's just fine.
It's only cheating when you get caught.
Right.
Hey, well, speaking of a comparison between Formula One and MotoGP, you know, we've talked about so much of the impact of Drive to Survive a million times. But MotoGP is struggling a little bit with TV ratings. And I just did a quick look this afternoon and I realized the only live race they're showing in the United States on television, not if you have the app, if you have the MotoGP app, obviously you can get it live, but is COTA. All the rest of them are replayed at good times, though, you know, typically 1-2 in the afternoon on Sunday. But what do you think about, I mean, do you think it's what we were saying earlier in the other segment, Vito, that it is, you know, Valentino Rossi's out of the sport, Marquez is on a, you know, struggled lately. Do you think it's that, or do you think it has to do with the way the television is, or what do you think?
I think it's all those factors. You know, I think for the true MotoGP Formula One fan, like myself, I haven't watched MotoGP on a TV and pretty much since the MotoGP app has been around. And this year, because I've sort of renewed interest in Formula One, because a couple of years I just, you know, I sort of lost interest a little bit because of the Mercedes dominance. But this year I got the Formula One app to watch it. So I can now watch it at whatever time I want, because I usually watch it with friends. So we watch it delayed and stuff. But I think, you know, when a sport is sort of trying to grow, especially in the US, TV plays such a huge part that if it's not broadcast at a convenient and a good time, it's really hard. And, you know, for people to start following it because they don't want to make that investment to go buy an app because they don't really know much about it. And, you know, Formula One did a great job with the, you know, Drive to Survive. I've only watched a few episodes of it, but, you know, it's interesting. It's a little bit reality TV, but, you know, it's a lot of reality TV, but, you know, it's made personalities out of certain people like Gunther Steiner. You know, he's like a rock star now, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I, sort of, I met, I won't say with who, but I talked about the sort of MotoGP version of Drive to Survive, a similar sort of thing. And, you know, we were criticizing it. We were absolutely trying to pull it apart and go, why is it not as successful as Drive to Survive? And my opinion, and this, you know, this was definitely coming from the heart because I love MotoGP and I love World Superbikes. I've always loved the bikes. I said, it's not through lack of content. You have a better story than Formula One because the drama, the human drama of a MotoGP rider, Marc Marquez is a great example. He is dynamite. When he is on form, he's electric to watch. The coverage of MotoGP is actually better than Formula One because they've been on this onboard cameras and doing dynamic stuff for longer. The graphics are better. The stats are better. And I mean, I'm being tough here on Formula One. But generally speaking, if you're talking about a Drive to Survive catalyst, the paddock of MotoGP has bigger stories. The mistake they made is that they subtitled, because most of it is a Spanish run and Spanish based now, or a lot of influence Spanish, including Marc Marquez and his brother, of course, but many, many, many others. And I think that was a big mistake. And go on, Vito, you're dying to get in. What do you think?
No, I'm just saying I 100% agree with you because
the Americans won't do it.
I started watching it. It took me probably four attempts before I got through four episodes because I just kept on, you know, a little bit of the, you know, even though I'm not a youngster, but sort of the ADD thing where you're trying to do multi things and now you're trying to you know, read subtitles and watch a show and you're doing something else, you know, it just made it very difficult for me to sort of follow it and watch it because it was all subtitled and it was not as enjoyable as Drive to Survive where you can listen to most of it, you know, in English.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the sort of examples of Fastest and many others, I mean, one of the suggestions I gave was why not bring a celebrity like a Ewan McGregor who's taken part in many a documentary on motorbikes because he loves them and he loves the sport and he's been to MotoGP and World Superbikes many, many, many times. And it needs that kind of, it's like the Wrexham feel. You know, you need a little bit of Hollywood in there. And you need to be, without being funny, you need somebody to be enthusiastic about what amazing aliens, we used to call them aliens, these guys are to do what they do. They're you know, I mean, when astronauts get excited about these guys, that tells you something.
Yeah. And, you know, Jonathan, you asked me to watch it with a critical eye, and I actually took notes, and that was the first thing I wrote down. And when I talked to you, you were like, I did the same thing about
the watch subtitles. That's why French art movies, you know, are so rare here, whereas in Europe, you know, people do speak several languages. In America, they speak one language.
All right, we need to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk to Vito about the sprint race format in MotoGP as compared to the sprint race format in Formula One, how it's working in MotoGP, et cetera, et cetera. You're listening to your Sunday night with Speed City, back after a quick break. Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstadt Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I am not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstadt beer, fantastic. And I'm, you know, most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated, and our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated, and that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it in on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com. Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we're talking MotoGP tonight because we got MotoGP coming back to COTA this coming weekend. And we have Vito from Ducati Austin and Ducati Triumph Aprilia Moto Guzzi from San Antonio. But when we went to break, Vito, I said I wanted to ask you about how the sprint race format was working out in MotoGP and compare that to Formula One now that you're watching both of those.
I think MotoGP, it's going to be, for the fan, it's great. There's more racing. There's more action on Saturday. I would think from the rider's perspective and seeing the follow-up from the first few races, you know, they only had 18 to 22 people out there. It's got to be more stressful, tiring, because it's compressed. And they didn't do like Formula One, which I think would have been a better scenario, is to sort of gently get into it, not go from zero to 21 sprint races. Yeah. Because now it compresses, they don't have the time to do testing. They don't. Friday now is so important because you try to get into, you know, the basically the top 10 get into, so they don't have to go to Q1. So it's just more stressful, more tiring. And I think when you get to the more physical tracks, like COTA is a very physical track, you know, there's going to be just more wear and tear on the riders. And no matter what, like Dorna and they all say about, you know, it's the same amount of wear and tear on the bike and the rider because they didn't really increase the laps. But racing versus practice is just two different things. I mean, even when I was just doing club racing, you know, we're in CMRA, practice is way different than racing. It's just a whole different level of focus, concentration, you know, and you're more worn out from riding, you know, 8 laps in a sprint race than 30 minutes of practice.
Yeah.
Because you're 100% on.
Yeah.
So I think they should have sort of waded into it a little bit more than just went 21 races. And, you know, we'll see how the year goes, how it shakes out with the riders.
I'll go even stronger and say, I think they've shot themselves in the foot here. I understand that everybody wants to see a race. I'd love to see a race on a Saturday, but, and I think Formula One versus MotoGP is very different here because I, knowing the mentality and having known Kevin Schwantz, who will be with me next weekend again, and Colin Edwards and you know, all of these guys and got to know them. They are willing to lay their body on the line come race day.
Yeah.
Whatever the race is. And I mean, it could be a moped for all they care. But that's their headset, right? But they do it so well that they come away with, like Marc Marquez, few times when they actually get hurt. Valentino Rossi is a good example. He managed to do that longevity because he broke his leg once. I think that was about the biggest major incident he had. And, you know, there are other incidents where there's freak incidents like Simoncelli's, which Valentino and Colin actually were involved in. And, you know, and things can go wrong. But the point is, if you tell them that they're racing Saturday, they're going to give you the 110% to a man. Every one of them does that. And that's my fear. Is that if you do that 42 times in a year, and I think that's how many races in total, because not everyone's got a sprint race. Okay.
Gosh,
the chances of you ending up, we've already got Espargaro out for probably a while and a couple of others. You know, I mean, now Marc Marquez should be the king of COTA, but he's coming back from an injury again. He missed out on, you know, so Marquez's career that shined so brightly could continue to be rattled with an early retirement at the age of 30 because he just can't do it anymore.
Heck of an impact, by the way. Yeah. That crash at Marquez, he rammed into the back of, who was it? Who was it, Vito? Do you remember?
Oliveira.
Oliveira, yeah.
Oliveira. But that was a huge impact.
And hurt De Martin.
Yeah.
But that's Mark for you. And no one's surprised by it. I mean, it was early in the race, and you're thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But that's Mark.
Yeah.
And he's not an idiot. He's one, you know, he's so skillful, but it can go wrong. And unfortunately, you know, a broken collarbone, a broken femur, these are realities which aren't realities in Formula One. I'm not saying it's less dangerous, but, you know, I do think there is a different mentality. And I do think that MotoGP should really review it after a year and mark my words, if you like. I think next year we'll go to shorter formats, perhaps, where you start on, you know, maybe you do a free practice on Friday afternoon and then you come back Saturday and I don't know. But I just think we'll get shorter format weekends, but I don't think this, having two races in a weekend in MotoGP, not Formula One, is correct.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I agree, honestly. I think Vito hit it on the head, and when he's saying they just dove in and said, we're just going to do this for every single weekend. And I feel like the riders are going to end up going, you know, exhausted and ultimately getting hurt. It's crazy.
And also you might get to, I mean, you know, motorcycle racing is different than Formula One. You know, Formula One is about the long game and looking at the intricacies. With MotoGP, it is hell bent for leather from the flag. And that's what makes it so exciting. So if you have a Saturday race, which is, you know, bombastic and awesome, you know, you're almost shy to come back on Sunday, and then you could go away Sunday night disappointed after Jack Miller wins by 30 seconds or something. You know what I mean? And yeah. So you go back into the office on Monday, because that's when really you get to talk to your pals, and certainly in Vito's case, he's in the showroom and everybody comes through the door wants to talk to him about MotoGP or World Superbike. You may not be as emphatic about it, and Saturday was a long time ago.
Mm. Hey, Vito, I want to ask you, what is, you know, we've heard a lot of riders talk about COTA itself, especially early days, whether it was best suited for motorcycle racing. You know, it was probably ultimately designed for Formula One more than anything. But
you say that it was designed by MotoGP world champion.
True. Then that's where I was leading to. Is that what have we seen? Now we've got 10 years under our belt. Do you think that those concerns? What do you think about COTA and MotoGP?
Maybe I'm biased because it's in my backyard, but I think it's a great track. As a motorcyclist, I go ride it whenever there's a motorcycle track day there. I'm going to be riding it right after MotoGP. There's a track day on the Monday. It's a great track because it is a Formula One track in that there's runoff. It's well designed for you know the speeds that you can reach, but it's a relatively safe track, you know, for a motorcyclist. And it's very technical. There's, you know, high speeds, you know, low speeds, three hairpins or two, but I like it. And I think it's got a bad rap for motorcyclists because how bumpy it was.
Yeah.
But it's honestly the last year, I rode it last year, probably six weekends. It's way better. I love it. I mean, I got this year or last year, really, I got to go ride at Misano. No, European tracks are just beautifully smooth. I rode Mugello and Misano, and you know they're beautifully smooth and nice. But I think COTA is a great track. I think it's still probably the best place to, you know, in the U.S.
I agree. You know, Vito, I kind of want to ask you a sort of off-topic question, but I just wonder. You know, I mean, you're about selling these things, and they're not cheap. And I wonder how the market is for sales of motorcycles. Sort of, I haven't really spoken to you, you know, so post COVID or during COVID, did people, you know, find motorcycle riding the only way to get out because you could have a helmet and get out of the flat or out of the house? Or was it a tough time like a lot of other industries?
So, it was really interesting. Yeah. You know, the first few months, like everyone else, no one knew what was going on, what COVID really was, how contagious it was. It was a lot of panic. You know, we weren't sure whether we were going to be open, closed down, or shut down because Austin had a lot of rules and regulations. We pretty much had the showroom where it was by appointment, three people in it max at one time. Everything was going on. But overall, motorcycle sales that year were honestly phenomenal because it was one of those things you could do by yourself.
Yeah. Safely.
You were by definition, you were social distancing.
Yeah.
On a motorcycle, on a helmet. So it was honestly a great year for sales and for service. Our biggest thing was having enough staff to run it. The part of the business that really suffered because we're predominantly a brick and mortar place was apparel, because for 3 months we wouldn't let anyone try on anything. And then we had plastic gloves for them to put on. We had all these things because no one knew what was going on. So most people were just buying things basically online and having it shipped to their house. So that was the only part of the business that really suffered. And Ducati honestly did I think more than most other OEMs did a great job of having supply. So we had a great year in 2021. 2022 started catching up a little bit with the supply chain issues. But overall, really, it was very strong, 21 and 22. 23 now, there's other factors. And, the whole banking, some of the banking crisis and people's concern about the economy that has sort of slowed things down. But we just had a very good March. And, you know, a little bit of concern, of course, but I think overall it's the brands that we carry are very strong brands. They're in particular Ducati, it's a little less subject to some of the economic stuff. Mm-hmm. That's more of a premium thing. It's sort of like not necessarily I wish it was like Porsche, but it's similar in that nature. Mm-hmm. The people that are going to buy them are probably still going to buy them.
I want to argue with something you said, Jonathan. You said they're expensive. They're expensive compared to Hondas and Yamahas, but they're way cheap for a compared to a Porsche or other toy. I mean, let's be honest.
They're faster.
20, exactly. 25 grand will buy you a really nice Ducati and in today's, car market.
It's a fair point. Yeah, it's a fair point.
I mean, what is the average Ducati? About 20, low 20s?
The average probably works out closer to 20 because the super bikes now are a V4S, which honestly, we don't have any on the showroom because the demand those are only pre-sold. And those are a little over 30,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And there's nothing more fun than walking out to your garage and seeing a shiny Ducati. I mean, that is a,
Well, thrills per second. There's no question. I mean, every stop. I've taken a few of Vito's bikes out, and I'd go around Austin praying for the lights to stop so I could have another start. I remember when one of the first.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven. Fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we're talking MotoGP tonight because we got MotoGP coming back to COTA this coming weekend. And we have Vito from Ducati Austin and Ducati Triumph Aprilia Moto Guzzi from San Antonio. But when we went to break, Vito, I said I wanted to ask you about how the sprint race format was working out in MotoGP and compare that to Formula One now that you're watching both of those.
I think MotoGP, it's going to be, for the fan, it's great. There's more racing. There's more action on Saturday. I would think from the rider's perspective and seeing the follow-up from the first few races, they only had 18 to 22 people out there. It's got to be more stressful, tiring, because it's compressed. And they just they didn't do like Formula One, which I think would have been a better scenario, is to sort of gently get into it, not go from zero to 21 sprint races. Because now it compresses, they don't have the time to do testing. They don't. Friday now is so important because you try to get into, you know, basically the top 10, get into, so they don't have to go to Q1. So it's just more stressful, more tiring. And I think when you get to the more physical tracks, like COTA is a very physical track, you know, there's going to be just more wear and tear on the riders. And no matter what, like Dorna and they all say about, you know, it's the same amount of wear and tear on the bike and the rider because they didn't really increase the laps. But racing versus practice is just two different things. I mean, even when I was just doing club racing, you know, we're in CMRA. Practice is way different than racing. It's just a whole different level of focus, concentration, you know, and you're more worn out from riding, you know, 8 laps in a sprint race than 30 minutes of practice.
Yeah.
Because you're 100% on.
Yeah.
So I think they should have sort of waded into it a little bit more than just went 21 races. And, you know, we'll see how the year goes, how it shakes out with the riders.
I'll go even stronger and say I think they've shot themselves in the foot here. I understand that everybody wants to see a race. I'd love to see a race on a Saturday. And I think Formula One versus MotoGP is very different here. Because knowing the mentality and having known Kevin Schwantz, who will be with me next weekend again, and Colin Edwards and you know, all of these guys, and got to know them, they are willing to lay their body on the line come race day.
Yeah.
Whatever the race is. And I mean, it could be a moped for all they care. But that's their headset, right? But they do it so well that they come away with, like Marc Marquez, few times when they actually get hurt. Valentino Rossi is a good example. He managed to do that longevity because he broke his leg once. I think that was about the biggest major incident he had. And, you know, there are other incidents where there's freak incidents like Simoncelli's, which Valentino and Colin actually were involved in. And, you know, and things can go wrong. But the point is, if you tell them that they're racing Saturday, they're going to give you the 110% to a man. Every one of them does that. And that's my fear. Is that if you do that 42 times in a year, and I think that's how many races in total, because not everyone's got a sprint race. Okay. The chances of you ending up, we've already got Espargaro out for probably a while and a couple of others. You know, I mean, now Marc Marquez should be the king of COTA, but he's coming back from an injury again. He missed out on, you know, so Marquez's career that shines so brightly could continue to be rattled with an early retirement at the age of 30 because he just can't do it anymore.
Heck of an impact, by the way. Yeah. That crash at Marquez, he rammed into the back of, who was it? Who was it, Vito? Do you remember?
Oliveira.
Oliveira, yeah.
Sorry, Miguel Oliveira. But that was a huge impact.
And Jorge Martin.
Yeah.
But that's Mark for you. And no one's surprised by it. I mean, it was early in the race, and you're thinking, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But that's Mark.
Yeah.
And he's not an idiot. He's one, you know, he's so skillful, but it can go wrong. And unfortunately, you know, a broken collarbone, a broken femur, these are realities which aren't realities in Formula One. I'm not saying it's less dangerous, but, you know, I do think there is a different mentality, and I do think that MotoGP should really review it after a year. And mark my words, if you like, I think next year we'll go to shorter formats, perhaps, where you start on, you know, maybe you do a free practice on Friday afternoon and then you come back Saturday and I don't know. But I just think we'll get shorter format weekends, but I don't think this, having two races in a weekend in MotoGP, not Formula One, is correct.
Mm. Yeah. I agree. Honestly, I think Vito hit it on the head, and when he's saying they just dove in and said, "We're just going to do this for every single weekend," and I feel like the riders are going to end up going, you know, exhausted and ultimately getting hurt. It's crazy.
And also, you might get to, I mean, you know, motorcycle racing is different than Formula One. You know, Formula One is about the long game and looking at the intricacies. With MotoGP, it is hell-bent for leather from the flag. And that's what makes it so exciting. So if you have a Saturday race, which is, you know, bombastic and awesome, you know, you're almost shy to come back on Sunday. And then you could go away Sunday night disappointed after Jack Miller wins by 30 seconds or something. You know what I mean? And so you then go back into the office on Monday, because that's when really you get to talk to your pals, and certainly in Vito's case, he's in the showroom and everybody comes through the door wants to talk to him about MotoGP or World Superbike. You know, you may not be as emphatic about it, and Saturday was a long time ago.
Mm. Hey, Vito, I want to ask you, what is, you know, we've heard a lot of riders talk about COTA itself, especially early days, whether it was best suited for motorcycle racing. You know, it was probably ultimately designed for Formula One more than anything. But
you say that it was designed by MotoGP World
Champion.
That's
true. Then that's where I was leading to. Is that what have we seen now? We've got 10 years under our belt. Do you think that those concerns? What do you think about COTA and MotoGP?
Maybe I'm biased because it's in my backyard, but I think it's a great track. As a motorcyclist, I go ride it whenever there's a motorcycle track day there. I'm going to be riding it right after MotoGP. There's a track day on the Monday. It's a great track because it is a Formula One track in that there's runoff. It's well designed for you know the speeds that you can reach, but it's a relatively safe track, you know, for a motorcyclist. And it's very technical. There's, you know, high speeds, you know, low speeds, three hairpins or two. But I like it. And I think it's a, you know, it's got a bad rap for motorcycles because how bumpy it was.
Yeah.
But it's honestly the last year, you know, I rode it last year, probably six weekends. It's way better. I love it. I mean, I got this year or last year, really, I got to go ride at Misano. No, European tracks are just beautifully smooth. I rode Mugello and Misano, and you know they're beautifully smooth and nice. But I think COTA is a great track. I think it's still probably the best place to, you know, in the U.S.
I agree. You know, Vito, I kind of want to ask you a sort of off-topic question, but I just wonder. You know, I mean, you're about selling these things, and they're not cheap. And I wonder how the market is for sales of motorcycles. Sort of, I haven't really spoken to you, you know, so post-COVID or during COVID, you know, did people, you know, find motorcycle riding the only way to get out? Because you could have a helmet and get out of the flat or out of the house. Or was it a tough time like a lot of other industries?
So, you know, it was really interesting. Yeah. You know, the first few months, like everyone else, no one knew what was going on, what COVID really was, how contagious it was. It was a lot of panic. You know, we weren't sure whether we were going to be open, closed down, or shut down because Austin had a lot of rules and regulations. We pretty much had the showroom where it was by appointment, three people in it max at one time. You know, the whole everything was going on. But overall, motorcycle sales that year were honestly phenomenal because it was one of those things you could do by yourself.
Yeah, safely.
You were by definition, you were social distancing.
Yeah,
on a motorcycle on a helmet. So it was honestly a great year for sales and for service. Our biggest thing was having enough staff to run it. The part of the business that really suffered because we're predominantly brick and mortar place. Was apparel, because for 3 months we wouldn't let anyone try on anything. And then we had plastic gloves for them to put on. We had all these things because no one knew what was going on. So most people were just buying things basically online and having it shipped to their house. So that was the only part of the business that really suffered. And Ducati honestly did I think more than most other OEMs did a great job of having supply. So we had a great year in 2021. 2022 started catching up a little bit with the supply chain issues. But overall, really, it was very strong, 21 and 22. 23 now, there's other factors. And, you know, the whole banking, some of the banking crisis and people's concern about the economy that has sort of slowed things down. But we just had a very good March. And a little bit of concern, of course. But I think overall, it's the brands that we carry are very strong brands. They're in particular Ducati. It's a little less subject to some of the economic stuff. Mm-hmm. That's more of a premium thing. It's sort of like, not necessarily, I wish it was like Porsche, but it's similar in that nature. Mm-hmm. The people that are going to buy them are probably still going to buy them.
I want to argue with something you said, Jonathan. You said they're expensive. They're expensive compared to Hondas and Yamahas, but they're way cheap compared to a Porsche or other toy. I mean, let's be honest.
They're faster.
20, exactly. 25 grand will buy you a really nice Ducati and in today's, car market.
It's a fair point. Yeah, it's a fair point.
I mean, what is the average Ducati? About 20, low 20s?
Now, yeah, the average probably works out closer to 20 because the super bikes now are a V4S, which honestly, we don't have any on the showroom because the demand for those are only pre-sold. Those are a little over 30,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And there's nothing more fun than walking out to your garage and seeing a shiny Ducati. I mean, that is a,
Well, thrills per second. There's no question. I mean, every stop. Yeah. But, I've taken a few of Vito's bikes out, and I'd go around Austin praying for the lights to stop so I could have another start. I remember when one of the first bikes I ever rode from Ducati Austin was a Street Fighter, and that basically is... it's a super bike.
Yeah.
And it's darn fast, but it was known as the Street Fighter. And that thing, I mean, every time you take off from a green light, by the time you get across the next section, you're in hog heaven.
Hey, Vito, I know you, when you came on during the break, you said you were feeling a little under the weather a little bit. But because you said that you're a Formula One fan now, I really want to keep you for the final segment. Can you do it? 10 more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, sure.
All right, well, let's take our last break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little Formula One. You're listening to Sunny Out with Speed City. Back after a break.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Hi, this is Jay Leno from JayLeno'sGarage.com, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we're going to talk a little Formula. We'll probably sneak in some more MotoGP, but I want to ask Vito. Vito, what did you think of the Australian Grand Prix with the three red flags, all the rules enforcement, all of that insanity? I wanted to get your take because you're just a Formula One fan and not in the middle of it like we are every day.
It's sort of like Jonathan said about MotoGP sprint race shooting themselves in the foot. Race direction, honestly, in both sports, seem to shoot themselves in the foot every weekend almost. It's hard to believe that they can sort of botch it up so many times. And for the fans just watching it, constant red flags, it's like, oh my, what is going on here? So,
not true.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, you and I talked about it on the post show on Sunday. And then Chris wrote an article, Chris Medlin, who does a show with us.
Which I thought was very well written.
Yes, it was. And he broke it down. And technically,
they got
it right. But the question then comes back is, are the rules right? You know?
Yeah, I think that's the point. Is that at 3 o'clock in the morning, as you would be, we felt let down and we vented and we said this is no good and
it's not a good look for the sport.
It's growing in America and you're killing it and all this sort of stuff. Very, very negative. And I got home, I woke up the next morning and was kind of worried that I went too far in my kind of like sort of vitriol, and then listened to Radio 5 Live's post show on Checkered Flag, and they said exactly the same. Now, the guys at Sky took a very different tack. They were very positive. And of course, they've got more analysis and more people to analysis. And they're also working with Formula One very closely. They're on site. So
yeah, and
they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. But at the same time, it was a more kind of, yep, this happened. And as Medlin, in his article, if you want to read it, it's on racer.com, said, to be honest, the stewards actually made all of the right decisions. You know, it's just a shame that it was a great qualifying, a great start, and then a bad end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I just think we need to make sure we have the rules. First of all, we need consistency, which I think we saw an example of that. They did follow all the rules, because that was the big complaint about after Abu Dhabi 21 is consistency. But I think we need to make sure we get the rules right, you know, because go ahead, Vito. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's Formula One. There's just almost too many rules and too much structure.
I agree.
Like the first race with Ocon, then Alonso, about their tire being just outside that box. And so they changed it by like 20 centimeters. I mean, yeah. If you're sitting in that car, I've sat in an Indy car once.
Yeah.
You can't see where those front wheels are. And to penalize them, then to make them go back and then have the whole thing 5 seconds turn into 10 seconds, then turn into, I don't know, then a day later, you know, who won the race? It's just craziness. They need to sort of, where it's not really impacting the race or what's going on, is sort of not throw the flag. It's sort of like in football, you know, sometimes you just don't throw the flag.
Let them play in basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually think that both MotoGP, look, all these sports, because of the globalization of sport, and I think social media is playing a huge part in that, because we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Hence the times are changing and all the rest of it. And social media is moving it forward because we're all discussing it. I really do think that they could all take a line from NFL, which is as much as possible. Unless it is really, really dubious, you need a voice of God to a certain extent. But you know what I mean? You need a race director to come on across both the broadcast and the paddock and pit area and the fans who are there and say, upon resumption, we will do the following.
Mm-hmm. Just like the, what is it? In the NFL, there's like a head ref. I forget the title.
Yeah.
But he comes
it's
on.
It's hard
puts
to
on
do. Don't get me wrong. But
oh yeah.
But what I found annoying, and especially in Formula One, and I've experienced it myself in bike racing, is instead of the journalists having to scrabble around taking pieces of information from the likes of Tardozzi, who's just heard it and doesn't want to say too much because it could be tactically, interpreted differently from another team if they see Tardozzi's doing this or we're going to do that. That you know. What I'm getting at is that if everybody knows, and that's fans and commentators included, what you're about to watch and why, then we wouldn't have this problem.
Mm. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this stuff plays out. So we'll keep on top of all that. But Vito, I put something in here in my show document talking about the MotoGP chief, Carmelo Ezpeleta, talking about F1's popularity boom can help MotoGP. What do you think? That's the what Jonathan was saying a little bit earlier about the rising tide and all boats and et cetera. What do you think? You think F1's popularity can help MotoGP?
I don't know. We talked about COTA. You know, it's been 10 years and I've been to Formula One since it started. I've been to MotoGP since I started. And it's such a drastically different vibe and different crowd and everything at the events. And I mean, I grew up before motorcycle racing as a Formula One fan, but I enjoy MotoGP now much more. But I don't see as much crossover as they would like. And, you know, you had also mentioned something about, you know, MotoGP bringing in the NBA boss, Dan, was it Rossomondo?
Yeah.
And I think MotoGP is sort of struggling and trying to like, oh, Formula One did this, let's try that,
yep.
You know. sort of with the sprints and sort of with the, you know, their version of the show on, you know, I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
But they need to sort of cut their own path. I think just the two crowds and two different, they're just motorcycling, no matter how much we love it or everything like that, it's still a very much of a niche, because motorcycling is much more of a niche thing in the US than it is maybe in the rest of the world. And everyone, pretty much most places, have a car, but do they have a motorcycle? So they really need to cut their own path and see what works, and, you know, try to grow it organically versus, you know, I don't think they're going to grow from the coattails of Formula One.
I'm glad you put that, because I was thinking that's they're reacting to everything the Formula One does and just saying, oh, it's working for them, it's going to work for us.
No.
And it's a, it's a very different animal, isn't it? It's just, I don't see that it's...
And it's a very different culture, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much.
Well, you know, there's a simplicity to bike racing too, and if you've ever ridden a motorcycle, it's not the same as if you've ridden driven a Honda Civic. Then you know exactly what's going on in the Red Bull car, because it's got a Honda engine too.
Yeah.
No, you don't. Whereas if you ever throw your leg over, I mean, even a 50cc motorcycle, you soon get to grips with how, oh my gosh, I'm on two pieces of tiny rubber here.
Yeah.
And I need to balance well. and therefore, your admiration for the guys that do it at their level, I mean, they are aliens. I mean, you know, I've been very, very honored to have been around some of these guys. And I do sit occasionally at a table with a beer in my hand with one of them and go, gosh, you know, it's this, you know, I don't often get, you know, starstruck, but those guys are special.
Yeah, and they do put their life in their hands.
Oh,
and
it's amazing!
And look at the safety of Formula One cars now. I mean, it's crazy that we just don't, like you said earlier, we just don't see the injuries. So,
by the way, I and Vito will back me up on this. I don't know. Well, I know very few MotoGP or World Superbike riders who drive on the road or ride on the road or have a license even to ride a motorcycle.
Really?
It's just one of those things. They go, I'm not going on the road. It's dangerous out there.
Yeah.
I want to talk COTA and MotoGP again, because we touched on it. Was this, I think it was either before we went live, Jonathan, we're talking about Marc Marquez, but we'd touch on it. It's his 10th year.
10th anniversary, yeah.
His 10th anniversary of him joining the premier class MotoGP. And the actual 10th anniversary is this weekend here at COTA. And it's the anniversary of his first win, because I think it was either his second or third race in the premier class.
Well, he became the youngest ever winner.
Yep.
He beat Freddie Spencer.
And won here.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I do remember that well.
I remember right where I was standing when he crossed that finish line.
I do, and it was a great picture. It's on the wall in COTA, yeah.
I mean, it's been an amazing ride watching, no pun intended, watching Marc Marquez, hasn't it, Vito?
Yeah, he's an amazing rider.
Is he going to come and join you at Ducati? I mean, you know, he seems to be a bit I mean, there's chat of him going to get KTM possibly. I mean, what's going on?
Well, I don't recall. I think it was either Paolo Chabatti. I'm pretty sure it was Paolo, not David Tazzi, but saying that sort of the time has passed now for Marc Marquez at Ducati, because now they have their whole young group of riders between, you know, you know, even Bagnaia to Marini to Bezzecchi to Enya, and then you know, probably some people that'll be coming up from Moto2, Moto3.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, Marquez, you know, I think he's, I could see him switching brands, because his desire to win probably will outweigh his loyalty to Honda, who's been with almost forever, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I watched his documentary, and it's, you know, the guy, he's just got an amazing will to win, not to finish second, not to finish third. I mean, it's to win and win championships. So,
yeah.
And he's, you know, he's honestly been an incredible rider, you know.
Well, Vito, before the hour's up, can you tell us what you're up to over the, you know, what Ducati's involvement or your involvement locally? What are you getting up to? And what should the fans know?
You got about a minute here.
Yeah, so we're having on Thursday night, we have our big MotoGP party.
Yeah.
Pretty sure, you know,
It's huge.
Who's coming? Who's coming as riders? We don't know yet.
We never know.
That's always last minute.
But there's always big surprises
usually
there.
Usually, all of them come.
Yeah,
or most of them.
Well, yeah, this year Enya, they haven't. There's not confirmation whether he's coming to the U.S. or not because he was injured, broke his shoulder blade.
Yeah,
we're hoping Pecco comes, and well, we'd love to see anyone. You know, Bezzecchi, Marini, or Johan Zarco, Martin, any of the riders come and. You know, some years we've had four, some years we have one, but we're hoping for a few of the riders come. We'll have our big party Thursday night. Then I'll be out at the track Saturday and Sunday watching. I'm going to play a little hooky from work.
Monday is a track day. Is that a Ducati track day or is that?
Yes. No, it's a Aprilia racer day. It's a pretty cool event. Aprilia does a day and it's very small, only 60 riders they have.
That's cool.
They come ride and it's also to test out their bikes. You can go ride an Aprilia. But it's a very cool event. Then actually, we'll be doing our own track day on June 11th at COTA with another dealer out of Houston and a Lamborghini dealer. So that'll be pretty exciting. That'll be a fun event.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. We'll be there Thursday night. Jonathan, will be helping him out on the microphones?
Yeah, why not?
And and of course, we will be on the microphones. Jonathan and Kevin Schwantz. Be doing most of the sessions out there.
And Joe Roberts has promised to come in at some point and talk to us.
Good, because we're going to need some expertise when Kevin's not
Vito,
around.
Yeah, Vito, come on by the booth.
Yeah.
Very welcome.
All right.
Vito, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate you coming on. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Right. Thanks. We had a lot of good more comments on YouTube about MotoGP. Thanks, everybody. And, we'll talk to you next Sunday night.
Happy trail.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary, but the good news is if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford, and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you may qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.